Live from the heart of Los Angeles, the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, creator of sustainable fashion brand Prophetic, Jeff Garner.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Skylar Jett. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Well, thanks to our guest tonight in a really big way. I thought of something that I haven't thought about since I was a kid. And I remember going to school wearing socks that were available in the household, namely my father's socks. That's how that was back then. But when I got to junior high school and we had to go into the locker room and suit up for PE, at that time I kept wearing the same socks that I was wearing all day, which were colored dress socks, I guess one would call them these days. Well, besides the kids making fun of me because I was one of the only ones wearing colored dress socks, I didn't know about white socks, and neither did my mom or my dad. So at the time, interestingly enough, the teacher pulled me aside and suggested I should wear white, quote unquote, sports socks. And I must have asked him why, or maybe he volunteered the information. I don't know. But this is the thing that he said. I don't remember exactly what he said and how he said it, but he said something about the chemicals and the dyes in the socks, in the colored socks. When we play sports, we sweat, and that gets into our bodies. Now, I took that. We got white socks, and off we went. Now, the irony is that the socks, quote unquote, sports socks back then might actually today, the socks today, the sports socks today might actually be worse than the colored socks that I was wearing decades ago. But I have not heard anybody else say that I can recall since I was a kid. Like, somebody knew that and somebody shared that with me. And then what? Then what happened? Like, why haven't we talked about this since? And there are people talking about that. Our guest is somebody who talks about that and takes things to a whole other level. So I want to say one more thing about that. So as I've become conscious of these kinds of things and wanting to wear more cotton, for example, or eventually someday more organic cotton or what have you, or whatever else I'm learning about. When I'm online and I buy clothes online, one of my pet peeves is I used to be fooled and still kind of am sometimes when I'll order something that says cotton blend. And I'm thinking, well, does that mean like it's mostly cotton, but it's got like 1% elastin or polyester or something? Well, I've gotten clothes that I've ordered online and it's all polyester except like 1% or 2% cotton. I'm thinking, why do they call this cotton blend? Well, because maybe some people are looking for cotton and they don't want polyester, so they don't advertise the polyester part. And I'm thinking, that's just wrong. Like, why can't they, but they'll have so many different kinds of polyesters, but they've got different names, so it doesn't seem like it's all polyester. Well, I don't know. And I'd like to learn more. And I'd think, well, why can't they just like take a picture of the label and post that on the website so we could see what's actually the materials made of? Well, our guest takes it 1, 2, 3, 4 steps further. And that is why I can't wait to have this conversation. I have learned so much from just hearing him speak, his TEDx talk, and watching Let Them Be Naked, Jeff Garner's documentary on this subject matter and more. I can't wait for our conversation with Jeff Garner in just a moment.
This conversation's so powerful, and yet I had a flood of things come to me while you were talking, Filippo, about the different areas of life that seemingly have been driven off a cliff by productization and material science and innovation for profitability, et cetera, et cetera. We thought we were eating hamburgers or beef burgers at certain restaurants, and then later we learned it was ammonia washed, you know, paste of some sort. And we learned that, you know, plastic soles disconnect us from the ground, and you know, it just goes on and on and on as we're starting to reconnect with the way that life used to be, which was pretty darn optimal way back when, and now starting to connect with, you know, a new awareness and some of those old sacred values. It's an interesting topic to dive into today.
Mark, such a good point. And our guest brings that up, Jeff Garner, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, where he talks about, like, we're getting more conscious of what we're putting in our bodies. But what about on our bodies?
Absolutely. On our bodies, in, around, you know, the whole idea of field science, we're understanding much more of what we're surrounding ourselves by energetically, and or what we're putting in our bodies with the listening and the speaking. And so we got about 10 episodes here in the first couple of minutes.
For sure, especially since he's an artist, he's a designer, and so it gets into like fantasy and dreams and all kinds of beautiful romantic stuff as well. I mean, like the clothes that he creates. I hope we'll have time to get into that too. So our interview guest is a style icon in and of himself. He's a romantic visual artist. He's an author. He's a filmmaker and unconventional pioneering fashion designer and creator of his sustainable label, Prophetic. Welcome, Jeff Garner, to the Life Changes Show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being on, and thank you for all the things you're doing. As you noticed, we could have gone on just talking about you and all that you have inspired and starting to inspire. So thank you for being that.
Sometimes it's hard to turn off your creativity juices, so to speak. So thanks. Yeah.
Well, and so creativity juices, and at the same time, potentially emotions or life leading us down certain paths that make us stop, look. Well, some of us don't stop, look, and listen. Some of us keep going, but you have stopped, you've looked, you've listened, you've learned, and now you're sharing. And what I'm getting at is that you've had some pretty hard experiences leading you up to, we really got to look at this. And some people might say, I'm just one person. You are the person. One person saying, I'm going to look at this, I'm going to do something about it. What are some of the things that have led up to this you? This version of you?
Yeah, good start off question. You know, my hippie dad always told me, he goes, Jeff, you suffer because you have more to learn. And I was like, And then he always told me, wherever you are is the entry point. So I was like, great, here we go. So I feel like, you know, and I'm a believer, so I have this, you know, perspective in life that of synergy of effect and how things come about. But yeah, I simply, you know, quick story is that born and raised on a horse farm in the country and outside of Nashville, Tennessee, grew up with musician friends because I didn't really connect with the good old boys there. And I, you know, connected with the creative arts, and, you know, I was soon designing clothes for rock stars. And then when I got into the production element of it, I realized how dirty things were. And it led me to this path of, I got to figure out different solutions. So I started early on with that thinking, just growing up in nature, and had a science background. My grandfather is one of the first, he was the first chemist that Oppenheimer hired for the Manhattan Project.
Oh, wow.
In Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So most people don't realize there was another kind of hidden base in Oak Ridge. And they were making the fuel for the atomic bomb. But anyways, so he taught me early on how to problem solve, how to create, how to, basically not have a blueprint. And we used to build houses, go-karts, engines, radios, I mean, all sorts of stuff. So I was just naturally born with this, idea of like, you can problem solve anything. So long story short, later in life, my mom developed breast cancer. And then I was like, I was the only boy. I was like, how do I help my mom? And I knew too much in the fashion world to know that these bras that they women wear every day has these carcinogenic, toxins in them and the makeup of the fabric and the dyes, and that your skin absorbs 37% of whatever you put on it. And people weren't talking about it or considering it. And that's when when she passed away, I realized I have to do something about this before, there isn't a voice for this. And it's a voice for all the moms out there. And that's why we're releasing the doc on Mother's Day, because, we get caught up in our, busyness, our commercialism, our addiction to fast fashion, which leads to just addiction to convenience, really, and I want to show that what we choose to put on our bodies should be a very important decision in our daily lives.
Interesting, you say addiction of convenience, and yet how convenient is breast cancer?
Right. Well, there's a disconnect between what we put on our bodies and our health. And, we've had this food movement that's kind of guided us to what we put inside our bodies. But if you actually look, and again, I was in advanced biology and, dissected. Anyways, all that to say is that I
Wow.
learned the beauty of design of a body and how things were strategically set up to protect us. And our bodies are designed to protect us from what we eat. So if you look at the esophagus, the stomach acids, the liver, the kidneys, we don't have a defense mechanism for our skin. Our skin is designed to pull in, air and to pull in water from the air. And to, if you were nude all the time, you wouldn't need to have lotions on you and those kind of things. So we stop that beautiful design from working when we clothe it with synthetic fabrication that doesn't allow any permeability or any breathability. And as you were saying earlier with your socks, part of it is sweating, but it really has to do with the permeability. So when you're in that PE gym class and you're running and you're working up heat, it's going to release those toxins that are in that synthetically dyed sock, and it's going to go straight through your skin at your foot, which is not, has a lot of blood vessels down there, and that's where you extract a lot of your toxins. So you're putting them back in, and then obviously you're going to sweat because it doesn't allow the heat to pass. So.
Wow. Wow. And so we're talking about dyes and, of course, polyester not allowing the heat to pass. But these days, I'm hard pressed to find cotton socks, and it's so much polyester. So we're also absorbing whatever the plastic is, potentially microplastics, I guess, and the chemicals that are used to either make it or to preserve it or whatever it is that are in the socks. We're waiting for you to make socks, or do you already?
Strangely, you mentioned that. I literally just made some last week. I wait for the right alignment. I don't do anything commercially. I created hemp boxers because my buddies couldn't find them. It's like, fine, I'll do them because I know how to do them. So I was at a friend's alpaca farm in Italy, in a region north of Florence. I used to live in Florence, Italy, but in north of Florence is where they, in Prato, is where they used to make. They still do, but it's almost like a little China. So they make, I have all these factories set up and they make the production for a lot of the luxury design houses there. It's now kind of in shambles, a lot of it, but some of it's still going. But I met this old family that has a farm there that's still, eighth generation, whatever. And they have alpacas now. And so what we're doing, we're literally taking, sharing them and having the alpaca go straight across the road into one of these old factories that they've reconditioned and they're gonna sew up the socks for us. So it's a beautiful like synergy where, and not to go too deep, but most socks have at least 10% nylon in it, because what they do, they use that as the thread line. So they wrap whatever that natural fabric is around that nylon thread to keep the sock together. So we're using wool and we're testing hemp right now. So it'll be the first sock that actually is 100% all natural fibers, which I'm
Wow.
super excited about because I personally couldn't find them either myself. It was always a 10%, nylon or synthetic mixed in the sock.
Well, even 10% is harder to find in stores, at least. So
Yes.
you mentioned the hemp underwear. So interestingly enough, thanks to you and because of your movie and you being on our show, we're talking to people. I was talking to a friend earlier, and I was telling her about the bras, and she says, and underwear. So you talk about the skin, but I would imagine the nipples and the testicles or the penis, I mean, that all the glands absorb maybe more than the skin.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's based on the placement of the body, but like the scrotum is your thinnest part of your skin, so it's going to absorb more. So, yeah, absolutely, 100%. And it's going to warm up, in that region as well.
So in the movie, I think you definitely talk about breast cancer and the connection between polyester and that. I don't know if you actually mentioned testicular cancer and underwear, but that seems to me all of a sudden
Yeah,
something to talk about.
I know. We needed a second doc to get it all in. It is in the book. We do talk about impotence in the film, because a lot of guys have different buying habits, right? So I simply just tell my buddies, hey, listen, synthetic boxers are linked to impotence, and this is why. And then they want to like they don't need to hear anything else. They just throw their synthetics away and change the next day. So, there's linkage with that, absolutely. With prostate cancer is a big, it's on the rise. And if you look historically speaking, like Calvin Klein, let's say I actually interned with him back in the day, and he actually used to live in Malibu. Or spent a lot of time here, and I was there with him when he sold the company. But he was big on cotton. It was bleach cotton, but at least it was clean cotton. It was cotton boxers, right? He liked the clean lines and modernness of it. But when it's sold, obviously it gets what I call bastardized, where they just look for ways to clip stuff away. It's just usually a money guy that CEO that buys it, or they're just looking at how to chip it away, and so they go to cheaper fabrication. So they go to those mixes you're talking about. And then they went to more of a polyester, that tighter fit that makes guys look like, more athletic because it's tighter. So it's got more spandex in it. So the spandex has what we call, it's called, well, not we call, but it is a chemical called TDI, and is a hormone disruptor. You see a lot of Instagrammers say hormone disruptors in your clothing, like, but they don't know what that chemistry is. And so it's called TDI, and it's been used for a long time. And it's just, you got to understand, when your body receives these chemicals, it doesn't know. It's going to receive them in as an enemy, an intruder. A lot of times it's going to receive it out like an estrogen. And so it's going to grab that and put it into your fatty tissues because that's where it stores things. So it doesn't want it to go in your bloodstream. It's another defense mechanism. So imagine being a woman wearing these nylon bras, nylon polyester mixed bras or nylon bras, and it's putting that into the fatty tissues of the breast. Well, it's simply going to act like a greenhouse. So it's going to store it in the fatty tissues. The bras aren't going to allow that permeability, and it's going to heat everything up. So, if you dive deep, you can see all these synergy of effects. The problem is that you can't pinpoint it and say the bras cause breast cancer. You can't do 100% like this points to that. You can say it has a connective tissue, that it has a synergy of effect, that it is a causation there. And what the problem is in Europe, that's enough for them to say, hey, hold on a minute, we need to look at this. way the government set up there and their policies. And in the States, they don't, you have to almost do enough studies, enough research, and enough like adamant studies, say 100% that this does. And so that's why, you know, when most people ask, like, why haven't they been talking about this? Or why isn't somebody doing something about it? It's because they can't determine 100% that it does. But, you know, I don't need, and most people don't need the 100%. They just need to know that, yes, it can cause breast cancer, can cause prostate cancer. And that should be enough for most people to switch or to like say, I'm not taking the chance. And that's really what we're after, is like getting this awareness to the table so that people can actually bring back the power of choice to the consumer to say, hey, you know, we need should know what's in the ingredients in our clothing.
Speaking of, you go on to talk about in the movie how I mentioned how we don't know what materials are in there. Well, you talk about what is in the materials that are in there. Like,
Yeah.
tell us about that.
Well, you know, not to go again too science deep, but like for example, formaldehyde. It's a buzzword that a lot of people have heard about. Now, what is it? You know, so it's basically it is the glue, so to speak, to keep those synthetic dyes on that fabrication. It's the staying power. It is something that you can actually smell. It's pungent. You know, and it's funny, in the film we did I call it the Brolic test, and when I speak, I talk about it a lot, and it connects to people because they've had the experience. So I simply say, you know, I'm a Southern gentleman, but you know, pardon me, I want to give you an example. So when you take the bra off your partner and you lick, you know, the breast, and it tastes like an envelope you just licked at a post office, well, that's a formaldehyde that's in the bra. And what happens is, you know, people resonate, and the guy, you know, most of the guys are like, oh, wow, that's what that is. And most of the ladies are like, oh, I had no idea. Like, I'm gonna now shower and stuff because, you know, and it's very interesting. But that's like, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But that's one that you can actually smell and taste.
And that's just one.
Just one. Yeah, there's, you know, it depends again on the manufacturing, depends on the dye color, depends on the fabrication. But I would say a rule of thumb is you typically, the way the ones we tested had at least 2 to 3 carcinogenic chemicals in it. Now, you know, and there's natural occurring synergies that happen that allow some of these companies to say, well, we didn't add that. But what they don't realize is, for example, the easiest way to get this understood is like if you're a runner or a biker and go for a run in that synthetic dyed t-shirt, and then your underarm starts discoloring it because of the synergy of effect between the aluminum, the metal, and the deodorant versus and the heavy metals that are in the dye of the shirt. And so again, just a visual synergy of effect, but there's a lot of that going on that we don't see. And it's again, it's just science and chemistry, but nobody knows this chemistry unless you're in the industry. And so, and the industry is not doing due diligence and studying the synergy of effect of what happens when you replace those women's silk leggings with nylon. What's happening? What's going into their legs? And how's that affecting their body chemistry? How's it affecting their skin? And that's what I'm calling out. That's what I'm saying. We need to study this more. We need more studies. And we need to move away from these synthetics so we have know nothing about all this chemistry that's in them. We definitely shouldn't be wearing it or eating it, right? And that's where I'm at.
Well, and or eating it. So not only the synergetic effect, but also the cumulative effect. So you mentioned like the deodorant and then put then lotion and perfumes or colognes and then hair and all kinds of stuff, and especially women makeup and all of that, right? All of that.
All of it, and think of it like smoking. And people laugh at me, but I'm dead up serious. If you get in my car and you're wearing a synthetic like polyester shirt, I'm going to put down the window no matter how cold it is. And all my friends
Really?
know this. Yeah. And because you're off gassing. And when you go to that gym, there's a reason why I work out in Malibu at the open air gym, because most people's workout clothes are polyester. And usually they wear wickerwear, which is sprayed with this gnarly chemical to help spread out the sweat so it passes.
Oh,
But
wow.
yeah, and people are like, oh yeah, Jeff's a cowboy. He comes in the gym with his like hemp, riding pants and t-shirt, and usually I have my boots on because I'm not going to wear synthetic tennis shoes that don't breathe and put that into your bloodstream. I'm not going to wear those, what we call, whatever people define as workout clothes. But yeah, so think about it. It's like smoking and working out at the same time. It's not healthy for you. And so that's why I don't go to commercial yoga classes anymore. Because when I first started doing yoga, people were wearing those kind of balloon hemp pants, the natural fibers. And now it's about how tight can you get your yoga pant. And I don't really understand it other than it's kind of a character crisis, maybe.
And the mats.
Yeah, the mats. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, even in the gyms, they have, those petroleum-based, mats that are in there, that are basically the same makeup as our wetsuits. So they're not using natural rubber anymore.
Wow, so people off gassing. That's crazy. So it's not only affecting them, it's affecting each other. And what happens when we wash them?
Yes, yeah, so obviously people have heard so many, weird statements, but one that's going around is that you can wash out the chemicals. It's like, oh, you can buy it at a store, take it home and wash it. Especially do a denim that's dyed with the synthetic indigo. And by the way, there's only one place in the world that makes synthetic indigo, and it's China. And the reason, because it doesn't have the regulations, because that's one of the most gnarliest, dyes for toxicity.
Oh.
And most people think they're wearing natural because it's a cotton,
Yeah, I
Yeah.
thought that
So
until right
that's,
now.
yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So I haven't worn denim in a long time. I do some hemp denim myself, but, and I would love to, but I just cannot. So the reality is that, yeah, when you wash these clothes, and it's, again, let's look at the design. So these synthetics don't breathe. So you go to the gym, work out. You're going to wash immediately when you get home. Why? Because you yourself wearing them know they smell. You think, oh, you just did a good deed. You like sweated, you worked out, you got some of those toxins out. Well, actually, no. You put more toxins back in. I haven't worn deodorant for 20 plus years. Why? I don't need to, because I'm not putting those gnarly toxins into my body, and they're pungent. They smell. And it comes out through the lymphatic system through your underarms, right? So, that's going into your clothing, right? And your clothing is going to hold it, hold the smell, and you're going to have to wash it. So people are washing their clothes more. And so when they talk about the fashion industry being, one of the top polluting industries, I think they call it number two now. But if you look at the stats, it's because of the washing. And so people are buying cheaper made fabric now in these fast fashion companies, and they're washing it every time they wear it. And so that's, the laundry does not catch anything. So you're gonna have peeling off of those synthetic fabrics. I mean, you can look at any polyester shirt or any acrylic sweater, and you'll see the peeling from your eyes. You can see it. There's smaller molecular deconstruction happening because synthetic dyes actually weaken the tensile strength of fabric. So there's microscopic, peeling that's happening, and that's going out into from the laundry, and that dark water is going into, eventually into our oceans, because we all have just one ocean. We think we have multiple, but it all goes in one place. So those microplastics, we in the documentary, we interview five jars, and they're friends of mine. They live up in Ojai, but they went around the world, and the most shocking part of their story is that they were like in Antarctica and finding fish with these little fibers inside. And so it takes away that idea that it's just concentrated near a big city. So if there's microplastic pollution in those beautiful parts of the world that nobody exists, well, that just shows the ocean currents that it's it's affecting everywhere, and it's something we need to regulate and look at. So we also interview, I don't want to be doom and gloom, so we were like bringing up solutions. So there's a startup in UK, young guy who knows, who's passionate as I am, but with microplastics, and he created Matter Industries, and they have a filter that actually is, it's basically designed to catch those micro plastics. And there's a lot on the market that say they do, because the washing machine industry is addressing it, but they catch maybe 10%. So it's almost like a false, it's just a false marketing thing. But so it's a real solution, and that's something that if people stopped, and said, "Listen, I'm not going to be a part of that weird cycle. I'm going to start buying natural fibers." Well, guess what? You wash them. My hemp boxers, I joke with my buddies, but I'm like, they're the perfect travel boxer. I just got back from a 2 week tour with the film in Europe, and I literally took three boxers with me, and I just rotate them, every day, and never had to wash them once, and they don't smell. And people laugh and whatever, and I was like, "Well, do have your, have your partner do a smell test," and they all come back and say, "You're right, 100%," because hemp is porous and nature doesn't hold the smells, antibacterial, antifungal. I mean,
Wow.
nature is amazing design, and that's it. So if you look at the history of fabrication, it's biomimicry, right? So they took hemp in the lab and then made polyester. And then they took silk in a lab because they ran out of parachutes for the war, and then they made the nylon, right? So it has traits of the natural fibers, but obviously it's petroleum based and it's made of just cheap ingredients.
Wow, there's so much that's going through my head right now as to like,
Sorry.
no, thank you. It's interestingly that you talk about how the film brings awareness to toxins found in everyday clothing and the health implications, and it's going to start a conversation. Well, you've long started the conversation, and so glad we're having it here. The film Let Them Be Naked, and I think as a nod to women and your mother, it's going to be, did you say soft launching or launching this Mother's Day?
Yeah, I've decided, against powers to be, that I want to give it away for 3 days for Mother's Day, because that's my heart in this. And
Wow.
then we can let the streamers do what they do. But yeah. So that's what I'm planning. That's what we're doing. So May 7th.
So there's been more and more talk about I like the forever chemicals. I mean, I don't like them per se. I like that this being called that because that sticks with us in more ways than one, right? That's the point. So you're basically talking about forever chemicals and how they affect each one of us and how they affect each other, how they affect the environment. And actually, to your point, it's good to bring this up when you say it's affecting the fish in areas where people don't even live. Well, if the dyes are being made in China or whatever else, and if there's one ocean, hello.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Pearl River, we went, not in this documentary, but years ago I went when I was younger, and we got actually chased out of there because we filmed the Pearl River flooding, flowing with basically, it's the denim capital of the world. So it was just, so denim has starch in it, and starch actually sucks oxygen out of water. So everything was just dead in this river. It was like
Oh.
tar river because the petroleum-based, dyes are heavy. I mean, it's tar, right? So you could light a match on the river and it catches fire. And it leads back
Wow.
to when the environmental movement started in the US. It's one picture of the Ohio River catching fire and these boats on fire in a river. And that's because of our dyeing, our industrial dyeing. And so that's what happens. And so now we just don't see it. And you go there, and again, there's a lot of amazing things happening in China. So I'm not, I've, I personally, I show in Shanghai Fashion Week. I work with people there that are trying to make a difference and a change. But this is this one region with the denim, because that's what they're working with. And the it's they got signs up saying, look at our water, how blue it is, and they color it and stuff like that. And it's just, you cannot produce or manufacture synthetic denim dye without it having these consequences. And that's just what we have to move away from. But the original jean was, by Levi Strauss, was a hemp denim with natural indigo dye in the US.
Wow,
And we
didn't
could
know
go
that.
back to that because indigo is one of the easiest plants to grow. And like our tobacco farmers we worked with in Tennessee, we actually worked on a project called Stony Creek Colors. It's also in the documentary because we wanted to change this. And so we've showed that you can grow it. It can be a new cash crop. And also hemp can grow anywhere. So technically, but see, the problem is the industry can't own that. They can't own that indigo. They can't own that hemp. They need to create some fabric or some dye in a lab and put a name on it and say, oh, we own Tencel, we own Lyocell, we own, that coloration, that water-based synthetic dye, And so that's what we're up against. And which is, it's a lot of industries, but that's where I am. But the problem is other people are getting affected that should not, like smoking. Like the worst part of it is the smoke because it has ammonia gas in it, and so it goes into your lungs. It affects you as a bystander. Well, bystanders are getting affected.
Yeah, I could just hear some people saying yes, and or maybe but you can't make the clothes looking like we want them to look, or so and you definitely have dispelled that myth in that I don't know about your friends saying you look like a cowboy. I if you look like a cowboy, you look like a cowboy that stepped out of a romance novel. So, take that. But these women's dresses that you make and the styles, oh, by the way, not only are they ethical according to the new standards that you are probably setting, but they're Sheryl Crow, Miley Cyrus, Taylor Swift, they're wearing your clothes. Def Leppard, I mean, they're wearing your clothes. And so they're out there on the red carpets or what have you, and the clothes are sustainable and all of that. So let's just quickly before we come to an end, and at least this part of our conversation today, let's talk about your artistry behind the fashion that you create.
So let's go into a light subject.
Yes.
Like I said, I grew up in Nashville, and naturally my friends were musicians, and like I was friends with Taylor, for example, before she blew up, and she's a romantic as well, by the way, and great. We had a lot of great conversations and just energy exchanges and whatnot. But so, one of the examples there is that, the industry wanted to dress in their formula of short denim shorts and cowboy boots and a crop top or something, right? And that was at the time, that was kind of the look for the cowgirl. And my opinion was like, well, why don't we try some, you're romantic, let's do these beautiful princess gowns and just wear cowboy boots with it, because that's how I would, I see my, future partner dressing, because it's like they're dressy, but they can ride a horse. It's perfect for them. So
Okay.
I always challenge my artist friends, because they're in an audible, I mean, they're genius of writing music, of lyrics, and stage performance is amazing. But typically, not with Taylor, but typically there's a disconnect, especially with the male artists, of how they look on stage. So I was like, let me help you get there, because let's create the visual that connects with your audible, right? And so that's why I always use live music for all my catwalk shows. And like my first show in London, I asked my buddy who is in Def Leppard, and I said, would you play this show? And he said, absolutely. So he came out and just rocked our first catwalk show in London, had a horse out front. And I just love the energy and synergy of the two. because it is a performance, right? So that's what I always tried to do with these artists, and they loved it because, you know, it's not me pushing. I don't need them to even say what they're wearing is prophetic. I don't care. It's like, to me, that's my role and job is try to get the visual energy of who they are, what they're trying to express in their music on stage. And nowadays, I mean, it's gone a long way from that because you got stylists that are being paid by designers to put their stuff on their artists that they supposedly work for. And things like that. It's like, wow, there's not freedom in that artistry of like, and that's why I don't know if you guys run across it, but the only time I've been in Vogue for best dress was when my friend Esperanza Spalding, who at the time was a Nashville-based jazz artist, beautiful. And she had this beautiful afro and just gorgeous and super talented. And so she was honored to sing at the Oscars. So she came by my design studio one day in Nashville and said, let's do something fun. So I made her this beautiful indigo dyed piece silk gown and she wore on the red carpet. And then we did a piece silk undyed, but with seashells going across it and very flowy when she did the singing at the Oscars. And she got the best dressed that year in Vogue.
Nice.
And that's the first time I was honored because most people don't realize how it works. Like, if you don't advertise in Vogue, you don't get in Vogue, right? And
Believe
so,
it.
and Anna Wintour's that we don't really see eye to eye with sustainable fashion, what needs to happen. So, you know, I'm on the other side. So it was an honor, but that's the beauty of how I think it should be. It wasn't, you know, a stylist or a designer trying to pay for. To get this on a red carpet as a marketing ploy. It was a true connection of her spirit, her
Nice.
music as an artist. And look what happened. People
Nice.
saw it and they couldn't move away from that. You know, it's something connected there. And I think more of that needs to happen. But anyways, yeah, so that's my kind of art form of how I look at design.
Nice. Well, you've heard Jeff mention prophetic, so I'm spelling that for you. PROPHETIK. So prophetic.com is where you could learn more about Jeff Garner and also the movie Let Them Be Naked. Now, stay tuned to Prophetic and also on the socials and at the Life Changer Show page for Jeff Garner, Garner, to learn more about how you can eventually see Let Them Be Naked. Where actually, and if you go now to prophetic.com, some of the clothes items that Jeff talked about, like the undergarments for men and women, are there. And pretty soon, socks. That's what I hear. Right, Jeff?
Yeah. Couple weeks. We'll have it. Those alpacas are being shaved.
And wait, and actually, there's not men's clothing there yet, right? Like, when are men gonna get to dress like you?
You know, it's funny. Everyone's been asked, even the ladies asked me. They like try to steal my jackets and stuff. But and honestly, that's why I just made women's hemp boxers because they were still in the men's hemp boxers from all my guy friends. So now we offer that. So I have men's hemp boxers, women hemp boxers, socks soon to come. And this season for September, I'm doing a men's only collection. And I don't want to give away too much what the design element is, but it's gonna be pretty rock and roll. And I'm doing a lot of black tones and purple tones because those are the hardest to get for natural dye. And people don't associate like you can get black. People have challenged me, you can't get black with plants. And I'm like, oh yes, you can. So it's gonna be fun. So it's gonna be a little Wild West show in this September in London. So yeah.
Well, it'll surely be Wild West. It'll probably be something out of a cover of a romance novel, but and it sounds like from what you're sharing, it's going to be sustainable and ethical. And thank you for bringing all those elements together for us, for sharing as you have in the world and now on the Life Changes show, and looking forward to more from you and your camp, Jeff. Prophetic, PROPHETIK.com, prophetic.com, and Let Them Be Naked, the movie. More on that stay tuned. Jeff, thank you so much on all so right. many levels.
Thanks, guys. All right.
Been such a pleasure. Mark, thank you for...
Filippo, what's a romance novel?
What's a romance novel? Oh, everybody knows romance. They get joked about so much. You know.
I haven't heard that reference in a while, so I figured I'd shine a light on it for a minute. I'll tell you what, I felt after... What a conversation. How much information there. And, you know, I think as a result, I have to give a shout out. I want to give a shout out to God. Because in thinking about the assault that we, like, how amazing is the human body? Mm. How is it possible for the large part of humanity to be doing pretty darn good amidst the chemicals, the processing, the radiation, it goes on and on and on, especially when you just talk about the depth of the conversation today alone, much less everything else.
Bombardment. And it's not until people like Jeff come along and we have these kinds of conversations on their show, out in the world, and in movies like Jeff has created, Let Them Be Naked, that we start to bring awareness to this. And you know what's exciting too, Mark, is that younger people are starting to say, hey, this is something we want to look at. I think they're noticing or they're feeling the effects of what's been happening in the past, century or so.
Well, and it's a combination of awareness and the cool factor. I remember, back in the day when, during the romance novel era, there were a shoe called Birkenstocks. And there was a big debate about them because they weren't necessarily the coolest looking things at the time, or they were kind of different, or then people got kind of profiled for wearing them. So the crossing over of making the fashion meaningful, because a lot of people will sacrifice, it's convenient or it feels good or it's cool, so I feel better in it, and yet they'll override even their own awareness of what's going on, so that to have somebody like Jeff, come in and kind of reinvent these categories where you're bringing awareness and you're also making it, a trend setting, a leadership product.
Well, speaking of product, you just brought in another one that I didn't even think about. So I know Jeff is already busy, and so he needs support here, and other designers can step up because those kinds of shoes can be made sexy. Sexier. Yes.
Well, we're starting to come around with the barefoot shoes, and it's becoming a fashion, and a lot of people are starting to understand. In fact, I learned a lot from my chiropractic visit recently, how even the slightest movement, by the way, pro sports coaches and trainers know this, or Olympic trainers know this, but somehow it's not in the mainstream, that even the slightest compression on the smallest toes on your foot affect your entire skeletal structure.
Wow.
It's really crazy how now then you go backwards and you look at high heels, you look at the way the toes have been jammed in these pointy shoes for both men and women. Yeah, there's many other episodes here.
Wow. Yes. It feels like the conversation, at least here, has just gotten started, and can't wait for more. This has been so special.
Thank
and
you.
Now, with that, it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Janet, and I feel so out of alignment with my highest and best good. I am lost, I am confused, I feel like I am suffering from brain fog, and I am barely getting through each day. Please help me raise my vibrations and regain clarity and vision once again.
Precious Janet, you are a powerful and amazing young woman, and if you will do a few simple things, you will be back in alignment with your higher self. Let's remember that whatever you put after the words, I am, you will manifest these things. For example, I am lost and I am confused are phrases that don't serve you, and you will continue to feel lost and confused if you say them. Using the simple words, I am, very carefully can call us into alignment with anything and everything we wish to manifest. Here are the original 8 examples that I used to help myself years ago, and you can use this simple formula to align and to call in whatever you would like to manifest. Number one, I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with the light. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with my own unique divine path and purpose. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with the law of one. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with perfect health and total and successful physical rejuvenation. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with receiving great abundance, being in the flow. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with soul aligned with my I Am Self's divine plan. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels with soul aligned with my mutually beneficial relationship with my divine complement. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment on all levels, with always having more than enough money to pay all of my bills, to pleasure myself, and with plenty left over to do good for others. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. And finally, I added one more for the many clients who wish to be in better relationships with their clients. I am that I am calling my entire being into 100% perfect alignment with attracting only those people into my life who are ready, willing, and able to hear me and to transform. So be it, so it is. Anchor, lock, and seal. I am. You can also call in anything else that is in your highest and best good. Just put in what you want in a positive, affirmative form right after the word with. After working with the alignments for a few weeks, you can then simplify the process by just saying, I am that I am in 100% perfect alignment with the light. These statements work great for me and for so many who have affirmed them, and I'm excited for you as I feel they will work for you, and I'm looking forward to hearing of your progress, dear Janet.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, be in perfect alignment and write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
For our performance segment, we have a social conscious singer-songwriter. Actually, he's so much more than that. He's a partner at World Equal, and he's a music ambassador for global change. And we'll talk more about music for global change here on the Life Changes Show. We are happy to welcome Skylar Jett to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Skylar.
Greetings. How is everything?
Greetings. Yes, you are in England, so you bring that energy as well. Thank you for being with us here, although you were originally from California, Oakland to be exact, right?
That's right. Funk capital of the world.
I should say that, so we have to thank our friend and previous performance guest, Ilana Lorraine, for introducing us to you. And I imagine you met her since you've been in England, right?
Yes, yes. She's been on my show.
Ah, nice. Nice. And we'll talk about your show more in just a moment. But, you know, I have to say, I'm going to read a little piece of an intro. Skylar Jett is an award-winning, Grammy-recognized vocalist and one of the most sought-after singer-songwriter and background vocal producers in the music industry. Skylar's impressive resume includes some of the biggest recording artists of all times. So the funny thing to me was reading that after being impressed, I had a chuckle saying some of the, it's not some of the, I think it was all of the biggest recording artists of our time.
Yeah.
How did this all come to be? How did you get into singing? Yeah.
Well, I've been singing professionally since 10 years old, which is 59 years. And my mom, my grandmother, and my aunt were all gospel singers. Two of my uncles were big jazz managers for a lot of huge jazz artists. And so I was raised around that all my life. My dad left my mom when I was 6 months old. So I was just raised around a lot of music. And it stuck with me, and I haven't done anything else since.
Well, you've done that, and you've incorporated so many other things, including motivational speaking, and of course, producing, and also music for global change, which we'll talk more about in a moment. And I just have to say, speaking of big recording artists, maybe one of the biggest songs of all time, My Heart Will Go On, from the blockbuster hit Titanic. Tell us about that.
Oh, it was amazing. A dear friend of mine, Walter Afanasyev, Celine called him. What happened with that was Will Jennings and James Horner. James Horner was the music supervisor for the film. And it was an experiment because James Cameron really didn't like vocals in his films.
Oh.
But James Horner and Will Jennings said, "Hey, let's just try this one on him anyway." And it's really crazy. It's, you know, I'm a big Raider fan. You know, before they came to L.A., they was in Oakland. But the thing about it, I told him, never call me on Sunday. We're gonna get in a fight because I'm watching my Raiders.
Okay.
And what did he do? He called me. He said, "Skylar, get over here right now." I said, "What's going on?" He says, "I can't tell you until you get here." So when I got there, there were four other singers there. And these are singers I've done, you know, I've been on over 2,500 records. So these are singers I've done a lot of records with. And he took us into the control room and he played us this song where Celine was singing on it. So James Horner and James Cameron, James Horner and Will Jennings said, "We're going to try this on him anyway." And he loved it. He not only loved it, he said, "I'm going to, you know, put this all through my movie, everywhere." And so Celine, this has never happened in the history of Billboard. Celine goes, "Hey, guys, since he likes it, can I put it on my record?" And he says, "Why not?" And that's when she called my friend, Walter, and put backgrounds on her. So I'm not singing on the one that's on the movie. I'm singing on the one that's on her record. And this is the part that never happened. So when it came out, it went to number one, the one in the movie. And then hers came on the Billboard and it went to number two. So you had the same song, one with backgrounds and one without backgrounds. And then hers flipped and became the main one. So I started getting checks from the Grammys and American Music Award, Oprah Winfrey, and it was crazy. And what's crazy about it, she made, I think, $58 million that year. And she just performed on the record. So you can only imagine what Will Jennings and James Horner made. They'd never have to work another, well, James Horner died, but you know, one song could do it. You know what I mean? So,
wow.
And it turned out to be the highest grossing theme song for a film of all time.
Wow. And as still to this day, I think, actually. So, one more power to you. And that's a great story. I knew a piece of that, but thanks for filling that in. And as I look at the long, long list, I mean, truly legendary artists and people whose music we know and love, you have so many stories. You know so many people, and you have chosen to use all of your influence and all of your learnings and growth and all that, not only to put into future music, but the future music that you're doing is all around what you founded, which is Music for Global Change. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right.
So when did this consciousness start for you about global change and using music with as the power behind that?
Well, I replaced Lionel Richie in 1982 and 83. But in 1984, the bass player who actually wrote Brick House had me come back down and stay in Alabama with him. And we wrote this song. We wrote a song to give to every family that had four kids, and we would pay for one of their college funds.
Oh, wow.
And at that time, we went to go see racist George Wallace, the governor. And we told George Wallace, listen, we're going to give this to the families, but we want you to put it on 360 radio stations simultaneously at the same time. And he agreed. And it was like the most incredible thing because we did it on TV. And I said to myself, man, if we can do that, if we can give money from some of our songs to help keep foundations' doors open, wow, that's what we should be doing. And I'm like, what about the people? What about the musicians that actually have money? You know, it was a trip because when I left the next morning, they gave me all these, you know, just beautiful stuff, man, like posters and everything. And I'm walking on the plane, and you know how you make that right to go on to the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Haley was sitting right there in first class. And so I went to the back, and I had a standing ovation on the plane because they saw me on TV giving this money away, to all these families. And so all of a sudden, you know, the stewardess or whatever, she came up to me. She said, Alex Haley wants you to sit with him in first class. And I sat with him all the way from Montgomery, Alabama to Hollywood. And he was buying me drinks and stuff like that. It was a trip. I'm saying, man, you did Roots. I was more excited than the Pointer Sisters, you know. but when I saw that, I said, we can help people heal, educate, and solve problems using just a portion of the money from our songs. And so I came up with Music for Global Change. And the great thing about what I'm doing, and, you know, there's no genre from what I'm doing. But they've had songs out, like the Marvin Gaye had What's Going On record.
Yep.
You know, John Lennon had Imagine. If you looked at, I'm an old guy, but if you looked at Woodstock, those young people stopped the war with music. You know, they would always do one of their songs, and then they would do another song about stopping the war. You know, and we need to do that now. I'm trying to do it for racism and age discrimination. They have nothing to do with music. You know, like we're doing this right now without cameras. All three of us was here before computers. And so, you know, I did an experiment in a car, in a van with some young people. And I start channel surfing. And I got to a song that they start going crazy over. And then all of a sudden I cut it off. And they, hey, Skyler, what you doing, man? What you doing? I said, guys, do you really care about how they look right now? And they said, no. I said, that's what I come from. You had to fall in love with somebody's sound. Music ain't nothing you look at. It's something you listen to.
Wow. Wow, Skyler, this is so important. And I want to get to a song and then come back to this. And actually, the song continues the conversation. We're going to get to hear a pre-recorded song that you did, which is Equal. So it says it all in the title, but share more with us, if you would.
Well, I'm a partner in a magazine in Ireland, and it's called World Equal. And the woman that owns it, you know, I joined her thing, and I said, you know what? In my mission statement, I talk about equality. So this is perfect because I don't believe in racism. That's the dumbest thing mankind has ever invented. You know, my parents, both of my grandparents were interracial couples. And we're talking about in the 20s when they couldn't even be seen together. But they were both married over 60 years. So don't tell me about racism. Mm. If they can get along, we can too. Right? And so I was staying at her house, man, and she had this other little cottage out in the back. And, you know, I seen all these fashion people coming by. And you might have one leg or whatever. And she went after people that just had beautiful personalities. And then she would get these designers to make clothes. And we start doing fashion shows at the Belfast Castle. And I wrote this song, Equal. And I brought in a friend of mine who's the biggest producer in Switzerland. And it's beautiful. It's so beautiful that she was going on to do this interview. And she said, I'm not going to do the interview unless you play this song that my friend Skylar Jett wrote. And I was over the moon for that, because the next 3 weeks they started flying me back and forth to Ireland to do other TV shows and everything. So I love this song because it's about equality.
Well, so many reasons to love this song, and it is about equality. It's called Equal, and here we have, here on the Life Changers Show, Skylar Jett's song Equal, pre-recorded for you all tonight.
No matter where you come from, when you turn to face the sun, we're all equal. Doesn't matter what time of day, or where you choose to go and pray, we're all equal. It doesn't matter how cute you are, or if you drive a fancy car, it goes to show your life's bizarre. Even if you're poor, you're still a star. Place, we're all equal. It doesn't matter where you're going, it doesn't matter where you've been. The only thing that matters is that you're spreading love, my friends. Here we go.
equal, simple, equal. Skylar Jett, thank you for letting us share that song. And if people are liking what they're hearing, I would suggest start off by going to musicforglobalchange.com because there's so much there. But you could find Skylar Jett anywhere, actually. You've probably heard his voice so many times. So Skylar, S-K-Y-L-E-R, and Jett, J-E-T. TT. Skylar, I have to say, when I first heard the song and I was taking notes on stuff, I put quotes around this phrase. I think it should be a meme with your name at the bottom of it. No matter where you come from, when you turn to face the sun, we're all equal.
That's right.
Brilliant.
That's right. Brilliant.
Brilliant. You know, thank you.
And you know, like I said, both my grandparents being interracial couples, that's what they taught me. You know what I mean? Don't let people tell you that just because whatever your skin color is, because people fall in love with each other. They're not doing interviews. You know, you fall in love because of your emotion, and it has nothing to do with your color. And thank God more people want to get along than people that don't.
Skylar, you're not talking about your grandparents being in California or in Santa Cruz or San Francisco. They were in the Deep South in the 1900s.
Mississippi. My grandmother's people was from West Africa, and my grandfather was on that side. He was French and Choctaw Indian. The Choctaw Indian were in Mississippi. So they had to go meet each other down by the river, because they couldn't be seen with each other.
Oh, wow.
And back then they had the river boats, and they didn't have very good lighting on there. So people would get drunk and they fall over in that big old, you know, river. And they paid my grandfather to go out on a boat and pull the body into the boat and take it back to shore. He got $5 for each body.
Oh.
And my grandfather said, you know, I can do better than this. So he heard about Oakland, California, which at that time was the third largest port in the United States. Everything coming from Asia would come through there, you know, and he started getting in with all the black people. He had real long hair down his back. He started getting in with the black people, and white people were getting pissed off at why you keep hanging out with them black people. They was pissed off at my grandfather. And, the next thing you know, he went and bought some land right in the ghetto. $3,000, he built his own house. And black people start seeing him do that, and they went over and started helping him build the house. So then my grandfather did something that was really, really cool, man. He finished the house, and he put a barbershop under the bottom, under the basement. And then he went back to Mississippi and brought the family out. And all the black people go, oh, wait a minute. Hold on. You got a black wife? He didn't tell them, right? 3 years, he didn't tell them, right? And so he's living in the ghetto. He got the best barbershop down there. He's cutting all, you know, the natural with the bubble cut. My grandfather was the best at that. You know, he used to cut all the black panthers' hair. You know what I mean? And there'd be cops just sitting all out in front of the barbershop, you know, waiting for something to kick off. You know, and it's really a beautiful story for him to do that. You know, and then on my father's side, my grandmother was Irish and Cherokee Indian. And then my grandfather, he was an Ethiopian. So I got all these mixtures of gumbo, you know, in my blood. And they all, both of them on both sides said, you know, don't listen to people that hate. You know what I mean? They just got, you know, they got an evil heart because and their parents had to teach them to be. You can put, I don't know, 500 kids of all colors in the park and let them play. They're not tripping on their color. You know what I mean? You have to teach people how to hate. Stop teaching your kids how to hate.
Wow. Skylar, thank you for sharing those stories and the messages, of course, in every format that you're doing. And one of the things that I really loved is you're a motivational speaker. One of the things you like to do is mentor and inspire young audiences about the benefits of positive lyrical content. Please talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is, like I said, I've seen, because, you know, I was here in the 60s, so I saw what music did to people. And it can bring you together, bring everybody together. But not only that, I want kids, you know, in America to see different instruments from different countries that they've never seen before. And with Music for Global Change, I get to introduce people from all over the world to collaborate with each other. And like, you know, you say you and I wrote a song and you go, hey guys, you should check this song out. Me and my buddy Skyler, you know, did, right? Well, you just introduced me to a whole lot of people I wouldn't have never met. Mm. And vice versa. And we should do that all over the world, right? I want these kids to see different instruments that they've never seen before. And I want you to collaborate with each other. That's Music for Global Change. So I'm gonna start doing festivals with positive music songwriters all over the world. Mm. It's been so cool, man, because, you know, at my concerts, you really don't need no security because people coming on to hold on to each other and dance with each other and eat, right? It won't be no riffraff, right? It's just love. And we need to bring concerts like that all over the world. And like I said, I want kids to see people that don't play regular music that they play and fall in love with different instruments that you've never seen before. And we're going to collaborate like that.
And so it is. And some of it, I'm reading some words here that I really like. Perfect blend of positive, conscious lyrics, catchy reggae, and an irresistible global groove. I think you're referring to not only the groove in the music, but the groove of the vibe that we're feeling, that we need this, otherwise we die.
Oh wow, you fall in love with music everywhere. It doesn't matter, you know. We got to get racism out of music. We got to get image out of music. They have nothing to do with sound and music. You know what I mean? And we got to get back to the human sound. It's going to be our fault if we don't let young people hear talented human beings. These people sit at home all day and they're practicing on the instrument and they can't wait to go play at night. I want kids to do that rather than somebody up there with lights and headphones on, bobbing and weaving, you know, and they making more money than the humans that's creating the music. Mm. No. We got to get back to the human sound, right? And so we got to get kids in rooms with great musicians, you know? So you look up on the stage, like, ooh, I like that instrument. Ooh, I like that guy. Instead of one guy with some headphones on.
Skyler, thank you for writing and singing and teaching and preaching. You go. And in our next song, we're going to hear Ja Gives Love to the Rasta Man. Tell us about that.
Well, it's totally insane. So about 27 years ago, a buddy of mine loved playing reggae music. He said, Skyler, man, I want you to write some lyrics to this song. And I started thinking about, you know, Jamaica, and it's an island. And wow, look what you have. Look what you have. You have this beautiful island, and look at the blessings that you have for having this island, you know. And so I wrote this song, and I dedicated it to all the Rastas, you know. Ja gives love to the Rasta man.
Well, for those like me who didn't know what Ja was, you laughing at me?
You know, I think it's great. You know, I think it's great because you learn it and you go check it out and you go, yeah, man, this is a Ja is God. You know,
Ja is God.
That, you know, that's that, you know, if you live in Jamaica, over there in Ethiopia, it's all about Ja. You know, so yeah, he's giving blessings to people all over the world. But this is for all the guys that write reggae music and dance to it, you know. Bless you.
Well, bless you, Skylar Jett. Here is Ja Gives Love to the Rasta Man, pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show, Skylar Jett.
From the ocean to the islands, Ja gave it to the Rasta Man. And the trees and the mountains, Ja blessed us with a place to stand. And the rivers and the valleys, all the flowers that are so deep. The rain and the sun, all these lessons Ja teaches me.
All the blessings that the share, we must not take advantage of. So we must take care of each other and be thankful for Jah's love. You know life's too short to live with so much negativity. So it's time to wake up right now and fulfill my Jah's prophecy. Jah give love to the Rasta Man.
Skylar Jett. Skylar Jett, I just have to say real quick, you've set another record. You couldn't see it there, but I have never seen our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, dance as much to a song as she just did to Jog His Love to the Rasta Man. So would love to see that on stage someday.
Filippo, I want to chime in and add as well, following up everything that has been said today and what Skylar just sang of, in the context, the official definition, in the context of Rastafarianism and reggae music, Jah Love refers to love as a unifying force encompassing compassion, empathy, and interconnectedness, and is seen as a core principle and the essence of the divine.
Yeah, brother. It's blessings, man.
Wow. You know,
shout out to a brother. Well, the guy was doing the language. I did a collaboration with a brother from Ghana, and he's singing in the language of Twi. But the brother that I wrote it with 27 years ago, he just died about 2 years ago. He had his house caught fire, right? And it was really hard for me to get that song from his wife because she wouldn't let nobody in the studio, you know, all his equipment in there. And that was just bad, man. But the blessed, so I went and recorded it again in Amsterdam. And, you know, I'm definitely going to send it out to all the brothers, you know, with this beautiful land that they have in Jamaica, and bless you, you know.
Well, now you're also reminding me, and I have to give a shout out, given all of that global connectivity that you're representing, the national motto of Jamaica is out of many, one people.
That's right. Yeah.
Nice.
That's why Bob Marley says one love.
One love. Hear, hear. Equal. And you know, speaking of collaboration, I haven't thought about writing a song in a long time. You might have just inspired something, Skylar. So if you've inspired so much, actually, and if you're inspired to go learn more about Music for Global Change and Skylar Jett and his music, so Skylar Jett, SkylerJett, of course, we have his links at the Life Changes Show for Skylar Jett, but you could go and find him on social media under Skylar Jett, and of course directly to musicforglobalchange.com, musicforglobalchange.com. Skylar, you are an inspiration. So glad your voice and your energy has been out there in so many ways, and now more and more in this way. Looking forward to more from you, Skylar.
Oh man, I got so much of this stuff now, but it does inspire me to do more, but do more with people around the world writing music, right? Because there's so much talent. There's 330 million Americans, but there's 960 million Europeans. And I moved over here because back home I couldn't get no love. You know, when I first started this out, you know, hey, what you doing, Scott? I mean, I got to get these young people to impress me, put the gun down instead of picking one up. So I wrote a song called Peace is the Answer, right? But the crazy thing about it is like people are catching on. And I invite you to go to my podcast,
yes,
which I call Music for Global Change Broadcast. And I just passing 250 guests, and they're all now writing social conscious music. Because I inspired them to do that. I said, man, you know, what was it? Like 6 billion love songs, right? But there's only 192 million social conscious songs. So that's what I'm trying to grow, that 192 million. If somebody, 192 million people written a social conscious song, that means we can build that. We can build that. And the people that's coming on my show, I say, I always ask them in the middle of the show, do you write any social conscious music, positive social conscious? Oh, yeah, Skylar, I wrote a couple of them. And I know why, because there's no industry for it. And that's what I'm creating. There's no genre for it. But 192 million people, guys, if we got $10 from each one of them, we can go on vacation for the rest of our life. You know, so
in Jamaica.
Yeah, everywhere, brother, everywhere. You know, so like I said, I just got back from Salzburg, and I was talking to all these vocal teachers over there, and I love to teach you how to write lyrical content, positive lyrical content. And when I'm talking to young people, I say this to them: I don't want your money, but I want, if I teach you something, I want you to go teach somebody that's younger than you.
Spreading the love.
Thank
you for that. What would that, what is that genre called? Is it called Music for Global Change in your mind?
But yeah, it's social conscious music.
Social conscious music. Okay.
Like when I first started this out, man, I was writing songs for the homeless, about the environment, women's empowerment, all kind of stuff, right? But when I started writing positive music, whoa, because you can see it in the audience. People are like, finally, somebody's, you know, life ain't all bad, but we don't talk about all the good stuff that's going on.
Wow. Wow. Skylar, we need to keep this conversation going. And we also need to end this particular episode for now, but the conversation has to keep going. So thank you for doing what you're doing, Skylar Jett. Just thank you, man.
Oh, bless you, brothers, man. I mean, like, yeah, please share the love, man, because once we get so many people writing positive music, man, it's going to change the whole narrative out here.
And I like the idea of growing what's already there. You bringing it to our attention that, yeah, there is music there, and there are people that are writing it, and we just need more of it. And so keep preaching, teaching, and doing what you're doing, and singing, and thank you. We'll be in touch for sure.
Oh, well, stay blessed, never stress, and stay away from the devil's mess.
That's the ending right there. and the beginning at the same time, with a big, big thank you to Skylar Jett, our performance guest, and a big thank you to Jeff Gardner, our interview guest. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark LeJure, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.